B-Pod Studios.
Felger.
I don't know, guys. Am I going to play? Am I not going to play? What am I going to do?
Mass.
Yeah, Mass, you stupid. S-T-O-O. Stupid Mass.
It's time for Felger and Mass, presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And now the Patriots with a first and 10 from the New York 25. Bourne motions into the backfield from the pistol. Floater to Bourne. He's looking to throw. And he tosses it off to Aguilar. Yeah. Wide open. Touchdown, Patriots.
You can see it coming from up here based on the angle that Bourne takes on the little flip from Mac Jones. The Patriots score a touchdown. I guess we'll call that a halfback pass. He lined up as the halfback, then went in motion. 24-yard touchdown. A lot of razzle-dazzle early in the year.
So that set a tone early in that game. Patriots go on to blow out the New York Jets. The kind of result I think they needed. The kind of result I think Bill Belichick knows they needed. And so he gave it to him. The good news is that they were able to execute it and actually do it. But make no mistake, that is ordinarily a game where you're not throwing double passes. You're not dialing up 3-4 trick plays like they did in this game. This is not a game where you need to pile on or run up the score. But because the team is teetering, maybe some self-doubt or lack of confidence or whatever, I don't care what Bill says after the game. I don't believe him. I think his team needed it emotionally. Confidence-wise, belief-wise, all of it. Had to feel good about yourself coming out of one of these Sundays, because even in some of their wins, they weren't feeling so good. And Bill tried. After that Houston win, it was hysterical. We paid you the cut of Bill in the locker room in Houston after the Houston win, where he says, basically, and I'm not paraphrasing, he basically said, I asked for 60, and you gave me 30. So we'll see you Wednesday. You have Monday off. Good job, everybody. You know, he was willing this positive attitude, willing this momentum onto his team. And even in victory, he couldn't get it.
That one blew my mind. Half-assing it. That's the American way. Yeah. Go, guys. Day off tomorrow. Whee!
Victory Monday. I asked for 60. You gave me 30. Attaboy. It's kind of what it was. So he was faking it. Now, here, whatever the effing final was, I don't even know, 51-13, you didn't have to fake it. That's a true blowout win. Wind at your sails. You're feeling good about yourself. I don't know if he gave him today off or not, what the deal was with that. But I think the team, I think the double passes and the trick plays and the pouring it on and the running up the score was all about that. His team needed it.
Oh, yeah. He was puffing them up. Totally. And look, you know, again, I don't mind it either from that standpoint. I'm just telling you that I personally am not going to put a huge amount of stock in it until they do it against someone good. So, as I said to you earlier, they're 10-13 over the last 2 years. Four of those wins are against the Jets. So you're 6-13 against anyone other than the Jets. And one of those wins was Houston. Your wins, three wins this year have sucked, okay, or the competition has sucked. So, but look, if you go out and beat the Chargers this week, you get to 4-4, and the offense has turned some sort of corner that you can now rely on them a little bit more. Well, then I think we can say, okay, Bill finally got to the stage where he said, I'm going to put a little more faith in the offense. I did like their first drive. I mean, it was quick, right? But they start off with a 12-yard run. Then they got a penalty, and they get themselves into a 2nd and 20, and they completed a screen to Jonnu Smith that they executed. And so they picked up 28 on it, and then the trick play.
It's just, to me, the screens and all the throws to the running back. Bolden was your leading receiver. He was your leading receiver.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, both in terms of targets, catches, yards, and touchdowns. And he had almost, well, I guess, no, so the late Bourne bomb was the longest play. But so it's just like, I just put very little stock in that. The Jets, for whatever reason, decided not to cover running backs yesterday.
I was going to say, yeah, the great defensive mind of Robert Saleh, their new head coach, he looked prepared for those screens.
I think they're one of the five worst teams in the league in defensive scoring, or scoring, you know, points allowed, yeah, whatever it is. I'm just telling you that, Mike, they couldn't even throw a screen early in the year.
No, so it's true, but to me it's really more about what the team needed. Bill was able to give the team what he thinks they needed. They were able to give themselves what they needed, which was a blowout win, of one of the first time this whole year where you really feel like you did everything right. And There's no yeah buts with the game. They needed that. And so they got it. And let's see where it goes from here. And if this helps get them on a roll, I'll circle back to this game and say this one helped send them on their way. But make no mistake, as I said earlier, I think Bill did this and they've done this because they needed it, because they needed to do it. All right, so back to your calls on this and the Red Sox. That's the show today. How about Tony in Charlotte? He joins us next. Hi, Tony.
Hey, fellas. How's it going? Much love to you guys.
You too, Tony.
Listen, I just want to talk about, even though I'm not so excited that they won 54-13, however, listen, I just think that it's gravy on it as we compare Mac Jones to Justin Fields. Did you see how he played against Tom Brady on yesterday, where they lost 38-3? And so somehow or another, by divine providence, whether Bill was going to pick him or not, hey, we got Mac Jones out of it.
Okay, so does it make us feel better that all the other rookie quarterbacks seem to be in shambles?
No.
No, it's too early. This one's really starting to bug me. The Mac Jones thing, he's good, guys. He's good. We don't know if he's the second coming. We don't know if he's a Super Bowl caliber quarterback yet. Here's my question. So Justin Fields, should the Bears give up on Justin Fields after his turnover-filled game yesterday where he's terrible against the Bucs in that sieve of an offensive line? Is Zach Wilson a bust after seven games? Is the best game of Davis Mills' career against the Patriots? That's it. Houston has no hope with that guy. It's too early to make a definitive statement because any rookie quarterback hasn't played a full season yet. It's the same for Mac Jones. He's played seven games against mostly crap teams with decimated defenses. It's too early to declare him the savior of the team. He's good. He's good. He does a lot of good things. He's incredibly tough. That might be my favorite thing about the kid. But it's too early to say, yeah, he's the best. He's the best of all the bunch that got picked in the first round of this year. We don't know.
Well, what if he is? I mean,
great, then they won. Like,
no,
that's
no, but what if he is and it turns out to not be that great of a class?
Okay, so, but look, then.
What if you just have the tallest little person?
Well, so this is what my point was. At the end of the day, all I care about is if Mac Jones is good.
Right, king of the dip poops. Like, right. I don't care. I don't care that he's better than the other four guys. I care if he can play.
If he's good.
Right.
Right, exactly.
Like, that's the point.
Yeah, In fact, I would rather have him be good and be the second best quarterback in the class to Trevor Lawrence.
The Eagles got it right by going Wentz over Goff. Congratulations. What does that leave you?
Exactly.
Like, all right, you got the right guy between those two. So let's say you got the right guy between these four or five or two or whatever you're comparing him to. What does that really mean?
No, when you start going down that road, a guy's better than all those other ones. Well, once you start, now you're just looking not to suck. Like, I don't want to just not suck. If the other guys suck, that's not good enough. I want to win. So you want a guy who can win. That's what you want. If you come out of it with a guy who can win, then you're happy, independent of what the other guys are. Focus on you. Like, if you're taking joy in the fact that the other first-round quarterbacks all suck, then you're probably a loser.
James in Maine. Hi, James. What do you got?
Oh, man. If they can't get off the field on third down, there's no hope for them anyway. But I want to talk about Cora.
Go ahead.
Cora, when he went nuts about E-Rod pointing to his wrist, I think that showed the Astros that he was scared to death that they were going to wake up and that he was scared that we were going to do something that would cause that. And I thought that was right there when things changed. And when Kiki went hitless, we were done. Once they turned Kiki off,
okay, well, Kiki didn't go hitless. He broke up the no-hitter on Friday. So
the near homer.
It was Schwarber is the one that went hitless after his grand slam. But we got a couple calls on this, and I like the take. I don't agree with it, but I think it's a fair thing to bring up that the turning point in the series wasn't Eddie Rodriguez pointing to his watch. It was Cora yelling at him for pointing at his watch, that Cora got in the way of the Red Sox swerve or swag or whatever you want to say by not letting his players be his players and feel it and be it and want it. He got in the way of it by coming down on Eddie Rodriguez. Again, I'm glad he did. I think Eddie Rodriguez tempted fates with that one. He disrupted the juju. It was Eddie Rodriguez doing it, not Cora, but I understand the point.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I don't know why this didn't occur to me till now. Like, as the caller saying it, you know what it really was, I think? Cora knew the Astros are better than them. And so maybe that was the message.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, it's going too well. Don't do anything.
Right.
Don't do anything.
Right. These guys are better than us. Don't wake them up. And look at the way he managed those last couple of games. He tried to stretch Sale. He ran into strike him out, throw him out, double play with a guy who's a low contact guy. Like, there were some mistakes that the Red Sox made there that you would say were relatively low percentage plays.
Do you see the nun who threw out the first pitch on
Friday? Oh, yeah, and then she tapped her wrist.
She did the one. Yeah. I didn't know until reading Shaughnessy, but there was a big nun contingent there, like the rally nuns.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of nuns go to Astros games, which is so cute. They had one of them throw out the first pitch. She threw out the first pitch and tapped her watch coming off the mound.
Oh, yeah.
You got blood by a nun.
Oh,
you
did. My God. Yeah, she said time for last rites. Yeah.
No, I'll get it right here. She walked by Cora on the field before the game and bled him. She said, hold on.
She trash talked him.
She did. She said,
cheaters go to hell.
No, she says, we're going to take you tonight. We're going to take you.
Oh, yeah, trash talking nun.
So the nun goes out there, throws the first pitch. It was a strike. She taps her watch and passes Cora on the way out and says, we're going to take you. How's that?
Oh, yeah. She was ready to give him the sacrament of the sick.
You're screwed. Back with more on a reentry Monday right after this.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming anywhere you go on the Sports Hub app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
You are a sorry liar. You are a sad, sorry liar.
98.5.
Literally pathetic.
The Sports Hub.
Bill, how much could a confidence builder can a game be like this for you guys? Do you guys post that many points and going forward now heading out to the West Coast?
I don't think we lack confidence.
I just think that answer was telling. I think it was a little touchy. And he gives it away. He wasn't asked about his team's current confidence level.
I was just about to say that. Go ahead.
Yeah, he was asked about what is it going forward in the next game in Los Angeles with the trip and a good team and all of this. Maybe it was implied in the question, but not really. It was really just, what does this do for you going forward? And Bill says, well, we're confident.
I don't think we lack confidence.
He gave it away. He knows his team lacked confidence.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's exactly what that was. It struck me because I didn't hear it live. I saw the transcript. And the answer was so short, first of all. And then secondly, the question was, how much of a confidence builder is it?
Right.
We didn't lack confidence.
Little touchy there. And I'll say it for the 100th time. I don't blame him if he's got that read that the team does lack confidence or they needed that momentum boost, good, go give it to them. And you can lie about it afterwards, too. I have no issue with it. I'm just telling you what I think.
Yeah, calling it like you see it.
I think he knows his team was fragile, teetering, not big believers in itself, needed this. And so he's helped give it to them.
And I would say particularly on offense as it pertained to punching the ball in the end zone. Right? The whole year, it's been the same thing. You get down there, you can't score in the red zone, you kick a field goal, or something happens, you're out of it, you're out of field goal position or on the fringe of it, and it's 4th and 3, and Bill doesn't go for it. So the whole thing was, maybe Bill lacked confidence in the offense, and so he needed to prove to himself that they could score, whether it's the Jets or anybody else, because that's the one thing you would look at and say, well, they punched it in. They scored 6 out of 6 down there. 6 touchdowns, like a little bit of a statement maybe for them in that way. But again, it's the Jets. But even so, just to get in the end zone, I think is a development.
Okay, we are going back to your phones on both Red Sox and Patriots. Ryan and Malden, what do you got, Ryan?
Yeah, so the Pats obviously crushed the Jets. The Jets, one of the worst teams around right now, and open up the playbook. And my point is, are they going to be this average team who's 8-9, who wins against teams like the Jets, bad teams, horrible, horrific, And, you know, teams like Dallas where they lose games, you know, close and not go for it.
Yeah. Ryan, right now I'm with the second thing you just said, that they're going to still not beat the good teams and they're stuck where they are. If they play their way out of it, then my analysis will change. But yesterday's game does not knock me off of what I think they are, which is not a playoff team.
Yeah, it's you know, what is Bill's phrase all the time? Stack days together, right? Stack wins together. Show us week in and week out. Now go to the Chargers and win. Beat a good team, and the Chargers are a good team. I don't know if they're a great team, but they're a good team. Beat them.
Chris in Wilmington. Hi, Chris.
Hey, guys. Just want to talk about, you guys started to talk about it earlier, about how some misses from Bloom earlier.
Yeah.
Just about the Mookie Betts trade, if we could revisit that. Wouldn't you think this team in general, obviously I don't think it would have helped towards the end of this series, but don't you think this team in general would have been better if it had a guy like Graterol at the end of the pen throwing 103 instead of Wong and Downs down in the minors? Thanks, yeah. Guys.
Yes and yes.
100%.
Yes and yes.
Refresh me, what happened there again?
It's medical.
Yeah, the Red Sox backed out.
They pulled one of those medical things.
Yeah, the ownership stepped in and said, we don't want Graterol, we're sending him back, and then they ended up getting Jeter Downs in the deal. So they got no pitching in the deal either. That's another thing to look at.
Because I know he was, I mean, we poked fun because he was like posting photos of, you know, ice cream on his Instagram at the time, and I think we were calling him Senior Six Scoop, so he wasn't in the best shape, but that dude's nasty.
Yeah, he throws over 100 miles an hour on his two-seamer, hard sinker. Now, again, he's probably erratic. But, you know, given the fact that you picked up Hansel Robles to pitch the seventh inning.
Don't forget Big Fudge.
Yeah, you know, they'd have been better off, especially if Downs sucks.
And as Pete Abe pointed out on Sunday in the Boston Globe, for now, Benintendi deal is a loser. Benintendi wound up hitting .276
mm-hmm.
with a .766 OPS for the Royals. His WAR, Murray, as calculated
important.
By Baseball yeah. Reference, was 2.4, and he could be a Gold Glove finalist in left field. Franchi Cordero hit .189, .497 OPS. His WAR was a minus .7.
Oh, I would have guessed like minus 7.0 because he sucks. But anyway, go ahead.
A minus .0.7. And he was decimated. He was DFA'd on Thursday. He's out.
He cleared, actually. Yeah. He's back at AAA.
So that's how, not only do you not want him, no one wants him.
Yeah, he cleared. That's exactly right. And so, look, I get it. They'll defend that deal saying, well, it wasn't about Franchi, it's about all the other guys. But, you know, until someone pans out from that deal, it was a mistake. So they should have gotten more for Benintendi. And I'll say the same thing. Like, you know, they trade Mookie and get any pitching from the Dodgers. They better have gotten some pitching in that Benintendi deal.
We've got Harry in the car on the Red Sox. Hi, Harry.
Hey, how you doing? So, Felga, listen, everything went south last Tuesday afternoon when you and said the Red Sox can do it, and your buddy Jim said they would too. You know, you three jack-in-a-boxes since April have been saying this sock, sock, sock. They came within six games of winning the World Series. You guys never saw that. So don't say what they need to do. Let them do it, and we'll see what happens next year.
Okay, then can you wait for another year to call me?
Yeah, hit him in its front then. We got nothing to
yeah,
talk
exactly.
about the Red
no,
Sox.
No, let's yeah. just, you know what? We're going to continue to do the show. But, Harry, call us next year and just spare us for a year that freaking tone of yours.
Yeah, and I would say, Harry, you know, don't criticize us. Let's see where we are in a year, and then you can say what you want. We'll just wait the year.
No, a year. Yeah. Give us a year. If you said, let's just wait to see. That's what I'm trying to tell him. Call us in a year.
Yeah.
Give us all a big breather of your crap.
Yeah, no, he's saying that we should not criticize the Red Sox daily, right? I'm saying he shouldn't criticize us daily.
I think he should just not call us.
I agree. That's right.
Then everybody's a winner. Mary in Newburyport, you can call us anytime you want. Mary, what do you got?
Hey, guys. Good to talk with you. I'm calling to give Mr. Maserati a big compliment. Kind of coming off what the last caller said a week ago, we were all rejoicing, and Michael and Murray, you know, were saying, it's over, it's over. And Matt said, nope, stuff can happen, and he called it, sadly. But
so you want to congratulate him for being a negative naysaying SOB?
No, I think we have to compliment him on his thorough knowledge of baseball.
I see. Don't encourage him, Mary.
I was so angry at him last week. I was with you guys, with Mike and Murray. I was like, shut up, Matt. You're ruining this for us, you know? But he was right.
No, he was prescient. I thought it was over. I thought it had all the markings of every series they'd won under Alex Cora. I mean, it really followed the script. It did. Lose a game early. People get kind of antsy. Then blow doors. And it sort of had all those trappings, all those markings. And they were on their way. They were up 2-1 in the eighth inning. Was it the seventh when Altuve hit the game-tying home run? Seventh, I guess.
Seventh, yeah.
And to lead off the seventh, he tied it 2-2. And from there, it was El Toilette. But I felt they were on their way, man.
I take it back. It was the eighth. Yeah, because Whitlock pitched a scoreless inning to that stage, right? Then he came out for
that's
the second.
That's right, so it was the eighth. You were six outs away from being up 3-1.
Yeah, and look, I would love to take credit, but the fact of the matter is, whether the Red Sox are up or down, I always feel the end is coming. So, in fact, I tend to predict the demise of every team in town.
Tom,
so I don't think it's prescient. I think it's just consistent.
Tom in Connecticut, what do you got on the Sox?
Yeah, when that Schwarber play happened, that double play at first base, my first thought was, why didn't he just step on first and throw home instead of dancing around trying to tag the other guy? He would have had plenty of time to throw him out.
Oh, Tom, the first thing to do is to just check the runner. Just check the runner. You fielded that, and so who hit it again? I can't remember.
It was it Tucker? It was a lefty, right?
Yeah, Correa was on first. It was so he had all time in the world before the runner was going to reach first base. He could have held the ball, stared Gurriel down there, Alvarez, on third base, and stepped on the base and easily got in the force and then dealt with Correa, either throwing to second or Correa, as it turned out, had gone back to the bag. So he still could have had his double play. Not that he would have known it at the time. But a more seasoned first baseman knows that situation, know they have to cut that runner down from third. And the first thing that you do is you check the runner at third. And he didn't, because he's a fish out of water over there.
Yeah, so again, I mean, I always feel the need to draw this distinction because I don't blame Schwarber for it. They're putting a guy over there who doesn't play the position. So if he doesn't know what the hell to do on a play like that, let alone in, you know, the late innings of a clinching game, elimination game, in the league championship series, whose fault is that?
More your thoughts on the Patriots and the Red Sox coming up. I want to ask the question about the Red Sox and what I thought was the best thing to come out of their run. But I'll ask the question. Are the Red Sox back as a brand, as a talker, as a thing? Here in Boston, did the last couple weeks prove that they're back? We'll do that after Big Jim Murray gets you updated.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mass.
Mike, you there?
Yeah, good. Hold on, I have a landline. This is my landline, yep.
Now, more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
In February, when I was asked about, you know, what my hopes, what my goals were for the season, you know, I talked about how even if we went all the way and won the whole thing, that I wanted to come out of it feeling like, really, like this could be the start of something. Like we had our next core, which would include players from the last championship and then players who were joining this core, being a part of something that we could be excited about going forward. And, you know, we fell six wins short of that ultimate goal. But I think in terms of this being the start of something, in terms of us feeling like we have a bunch of guys who joined this group who are ready to help us win going forward, I think we're there. I think the mission now is just to continue to build on that. What we had this year, what we had in Fenway Park, playing postseason baseball, meaningful games, getting almost all the way to the World Series, that's the type of vibe we want here every year, to have a club capable of doing that every year. So I think we just need to be focused on making moves, large and small, that push us towards that goal. There's obviously a lot of things that can fit into that, but that's how we're going to frame it. We want to carry this forward and win every year.
Heim Bloom from today, talking really about the on-field product as much as anything. And I think he sort of, again, gave away what I think was their first goal, which was to set up the system and the long-term. It was a bigger priority than the short-term. And the short-term for them was a nice bonus on top. But what they really wanted was to set up the system and be in the top 10 of baseball America and blah, blah, blah. And so that's really what he's talking about. Which is fine. You know, that's what he was hired to do. And I guess he's on his way to doing it. I'm talking about off the field, Maz. My off the field question. Do you think the Red Sox are back as a brand, a product, a talker? You know, because for a couple of weeks there, they were the story.
Yeah.
Which I was not sure they would ever be again. Even winning playoff games, even in the playoffs. Like, for example, I'll give it to you. In 2018, I don't think they ever really tipped the scales, if you know what I mean. Like, became the heartbeat of the city, the talk of the city, the driver. I'm sure the ratings were good back in 2018. We all cared. Like, I'm not saying that people ignored them or anything like that. But I don't feel they caught fire in 2018 as a talk show topic, certainly, but even as just a thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Know exactly what you mean.
This year, I think they caught fire. This year, I think they became the thing. And I didn't know they were capable of doing that again. Is that here to stay?
So I'm always loath or reluctant to say here to stay. But if you're asking me, can they carry it over? Yeah. Yeah, they can carry it over. But, you know, there are some variables. And when I say carry it over, I mean, I'm more interested now in the offseason than I would have otherwise been. I will look at them now and say, how are you going to build on this? What's it going to look like next year? Sales going to come back better? Like, are they more interesting to me than they were at the beginning of the year? My answer is yes.
Yeah, they are. But I still need to see this sustained over next season, because I believe this pop that they got, and it was justified for sure. Like, but the ratings and how high they were, what that crowd was like at Fenway, which was insane. I tend to believe that all of that was due to the fact that fans in this region thought the championships might be over, like in this area we're in right now, because no Brady. The windows look iffy for the Bruins, the Celtics, the Red Sox. I don't think the expectations were that high. People are clinging to that last taste of duck boats. This was a taste that people have been lusting for that we haven't had in the last two or so years. And you almost got it with this team. So people just jumped aboard. And I think that's what that was. So maybe, but I think it's too early to determine if the Red Sox are quote unquote back.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, it is too early. And I think, you know, and I don't even really think it started until that Yankees game.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, you can tell me, Maz.
No, that's fair.
You know, there was...
Mike, some of the... I'm sorry to cut you off. Yeah. The games they played with the Yankees at the end of the regular season, the first couple of games of that series were not sellouts.
And what were they getting? Fives? I remember you were pissed about it.
Yeah, so again, they were the ratings they were doing on television were in the fives, five, five and a half range, which I thought late season series with the Yankees, Fenway Park, you know, post-Labor Day playoff spot at stake, I thought those would do better. They didn't. So it totally kicked up at the wild card game.
And, you know, no matter how many releases the team sends out or Barstool embarrassingly reposts, like, as a news item, their TV ratings were not good in the regular season. They weren't. I mean, they were up from the pandemic year, but they were down in most respects from 18 and 19. And so it's like the ratings weren't good. There really wasn't much of a pop. But, boy, after that Yankee game, they legitimately caught fire.
It kicked.
I mean, yeah. It really did. And I thought it was great to see, frankly, whether I'm a Red Sox fan or not, or baseball is, you know, Boston baseball is my first sport or not. I mean, that was cool. Where, like, baseball was. Shaughnessy wrote about it, too. He says, well, remember a stretch in October when the Sox took over the town. Just like 67, 75, 2004, 2013, and 2018, we were all sucked in. For one of these old cahoots to compare this interest to 1967, you understand. You know how I feel about these old farts in 1967. The pedestal these olds put on 67. For Dan or any one of these guys to compare what was going on here to 1967, holy crap. Like, that says something.
That's a big step.
That is major. Like, bite your tongue, Daniel.
Oh, yeah, that's a big step. That's hallowed ground.
To dream the impossible dream. Like, you can't do that. What happens to the DVD set? You start comparing 2021 to 1967? What are you freaking nuts, Dan? But either way, it was there. That was for, I don't know what the time exact, 10 days, 2 weeks from the Yankees game until last Friday, it was the Red Sox.
Absolutely.
And this coincided with some big Patriot games. And I thought it was great to see. And I didn't know they were capable of that. So I think, you know, that sort of showed me as a brand, the Red Sox thing is still capable of that. So good. That's great. I don't know how you get it back in the regular season, because the sport is bogged down to such a, you know, incredible degree. and it's really hard to invest and engage in regular season baseball, given what the game's become. But either way, I now know the ceiling of the team. It's still very, very high in terms of public interest.
Yeah, so what they got to do is build on it, okay? And this is why I say that what they do in the offseason and where it goes can have a profound impact. You know, if there were some sort of big move coming, like, I think people would go, whoa, okay, now we're serious here. Okay, like, and I'm just, you know.
Yeah, they go and get Scherzer.
Right, whatever. Whoa, okay, and sales going to be closer to 100%, and, well, now maybe we got something. If there's a big move, I think they'll you know, it'll snowball a little bit.
And the Yankees, if they stay good, that'll help.
Sure.
Because even though the attendance and the ratings might have been disappointing in that regular season Yankees series, the atmosphere that was there in the building with those Yankee games was great. There's so many New Yorkers there. It was a good back and forth, and I think maybe that sort of fed into the wild card thing and, you know, the whole thing. But, you know, to answer my own question, I think the Red Sox kind of came back in the last couple of weeks, came back as a real force, and I did not know they were capable of it. A big thing here is going to be now the CBA, which is something no one wants to hear or talk about. And so I hope we don't have to do too much of it. But watch, just when the Red Sox get back on track, get the wind at their sails in terms of public support, and they get the buzz back in the street, and they have a new guy that comes here and turns the franchise around, watch, they're going to lose half the season, going to shut the sport down.
And they might be a franchise that is hurt by it as much or more than anyone else. But for the reasons you just talked about, if the sport gets shut down, they will make no big moves. There will be no big business, and the interest will drop again. I mean, they have a lot at stake with this CBA, and they know it.
And the thing for me is, though, I want the owners to go to war on this CBA, but not for any of the economics. Although it could certainly use tweaking. And then teams that tank, you know, they got to address like that sort of stuff. They can go after that. But I need pace of play initiatives is what I need. I need, you know, pitch clocks, and I can't have these 4-hour games. No one can. They can't. I mean, that really, really, really has to be addressed. And the three true outcomes and the shifts and, oh, there's so much stuff. And I want the owners to go to war. I want them to go to the mattresses on those items and change the game. Use this, because this is your last chance until the next CBA. These things have to be collectively bargained. The players aren't going to go for them in the interim, so you got to get it in writing now. And you've got to fight for them. And so I'm okay if they lose time, if they come back with a pitch clock, if they come back with no shifts, if they come back with whatever, you know, to get the game moving, get the ball in play and all those things, reduce strikeouts. Oh, God, they've got to reduce strikeouts. So I'm okay losing time if that's what it takes. It's just it's going to interrupt what feels like, for the first time in a while, some real momentum.
And the problem is that the changes, if they do have a stoppage, I bet you the changes are going to stop short of what they need. Like, the game historically has dragged its feet. It never gets to anything quickly. Maybe it'll take a work stoppage to make major changes in the way the game is played. But, you know, I don't have a lot of confidence that this thing will get addressed swiftly. I think it's potential worst-case scenario for the Red Sox. Okay, and again, shocking, I know, but I do. I think that this is going to quell activity in the market, because everyone knows there's potentially a work stoppage coming. They're in a position where they could be hurt by it more, and then the changes in the game from the new CBA will not be significant enough to alter really the immediate future, short-term future of the game. So I have great trepidation about it. I feel like it's all going to get blown up.
Okay, we can go back to your phones and suck on that for a minute or two. Mr. Sunshine over there. We have a reentry Monday on the table. Everything from the Patriots weekend and the Red Sox weekend. Back to your calls in our long commercial-free segment next.
It's Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mazz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mass.
I'm just going to ramble and rant for 15 minutes if you let me. I'm not joking.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
I'm good, man. I'm really good, to be honest with you. But you know, obviously disappointed and sad that we didn't pull this off. But I've been good for a while. You know, there were a lot of good things that happened, not only professionally, but you know, personally, that I was able to see a lot of people enjoy baseball again.
He's good with the result, really good, which I get, I guess, you know, it's more than most people expected, probably they expected. They still blew it. So is it possible to overachieve and do more than you expected and still blow it?
Absolutely, it's still possible.
I mean, no telling when they'll be in that spot again. Two games away from the World Series with two home games against a team that's without its ace, with an 88-win opponent waiting for you in the World Series. I don't know if that's ever going to line up again for them like
that. No, and that's the part, again, as you get away from it, you say, well, boy, did that thing open up for them. It really did. You got to the point where you had home field in the American League Championship Series because you were up 2-1 with two more games at home. You had won, at that point, what, 7 in a row at home in the postseason with Alex Cora as your manager, or 6 or whatever it was. You looked unbeatable in that ballpark. You hadn't been beaten there all year. And in the National League, the Dodgers got bounced. The Braves are now the team in the NL, and because their 88 wins were less than yours, independent of division title or wild card, you were going to get home field in the World Series. The World Series would be opening here tomorrow night if they had beaten the Astros.
It can definitely be both, because they ultimately had like an A for a season, B-plus-ish, because, I don't know, again, I buried them, I put the nail in, so it was a good season for them overall, but the way that it played out and the way that they lost this series was kind of a gag job.
I mean, Mike, in that way, the way it lined up for them and it fell into place was a little like the Bruins in the year they lost to the Blues.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it broke right for them, and, you know, maybe you weren't the best team in the league, but you were a good team, and some things fell right for you, and you had a chance to win the whole thing, as it turned out. So that's the part I think that they will regret when they get away from it. So Cora can sit there and say, yeah, I feel good, you know, because, again, he was with the Astros. He thinks some of those guys are great. And so he probably, in his heart, and I believe this, in his heart, he thinks they didn't have the talent that Houston did. And I think that's part of the reason he managed the way he did in those last couple of games, because he made some low-chance mistakes. Really, when you look at it, it was a little out of character. Like, what the hell happened there? And so I think you look back on it and say, you had a chance there to steal one. You had a chance, and it slipped through your fingers.
All right, Red Sox, Patriots, we continue with your thoughts on both. Bob and Pembroke. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Mike. I think one of the reasons, I think the Patriots are one reason why the Red Sox were so popular during the playoffs. There was a void there that needed to be filled, and the fans are happy to jump into the Red Sox.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just started to read something when you were saying something. What did he just say there?
He said that the part of the reason the Red Sox became as much of a thing as they did is because the Patriots faded a little.
I think that's part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that helps. I think, you know, any scenario where the Red Sox come back and in any way challenge the Patriots in popularity has to coincide with the Patriots taking a step back.
Definitely.
If the Patriots once again become championship caliber or a contender, the Sox and everyone else is porked. It's just the way it works in this country. If your football team's good, you're a football town, and there's nothing you can really do about it. But if the Pats falter, if they just become just like any other team, any other middling team without Tom Brady, Sox have a chance. And I think, and I wasn't sure of that, and I'm still not, but I think this last couple of weeks was eye-opening because they were box office here for the last couple of weeks. Chris in Worcester, what do you got, Chris?
Hey, first from Murray, you, I hate you sometimes, but you stole it though, and congratulations on the last night of the Baseball Hour show.
Thank you.
Maz, I love you. I love it. I'm gonna miss it. Gonna miss it. But that's what I was talking about. Like, if they went to Game 7, I was gonna give them the A, but now I'm going B plus. I know we don't like, but I like, and this is from top down ownership all the way down to the players. I gave him a B plus because I had him at 84 wins, and
okay.
You know Stu was right.
Well, but
thank you.
So you had him with 84 wins. They, you know, they killed Vegas, but no one should have been really surprised. Or your baseline expectation for the team should have been contend for a playoff spot, contend for a wild card spot. That should have been your baseline expectation, and not necessarily get in, but contend. The last couple weeks of the year have meaningful baseball games. Well, that's exactly what you did, and you made the wild card by one game. So it's like, at that point, to say that they had wildly overachieved is just silly.
I don't know. You still look
with the fourth payroll in baseball to make the wild card on the last day, that's hardly a massive overachievement.
You had to add Travis Shaw off the street to your roster. He's had got a key at bat that he strikes out on in the seventh inning. You see Danny Santana appearing in this series. Like, there's guys that are just like were junk. So
most teams have some junk on the bottom of their roster.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought they were a trash team that wasn't even going to make the playoffs. So for where they got, I thought that they kind of overachieved.
I mean, to me, the overachievement was from the Yankees wild card game to game four of the ALCS. That's a run that I think no one had, you know, win the wild card, blow doors on the Rays, and then get two games away from the World Series. So that stretch there was where I think they overachieved.
Yeah, the Tampa series, I think, was the key one, right? Like, you know, so they beat the Yankees, fine. They get in, they get their asses kicked by the Rays. We all go, well, so what? But they beat them. You know, so they pushed it. Look, again, I'm not disagreeing with what you said, because at the beginning of the year, I said push for that wild card spot and maybe even get in. You get in there, you can do that with what their core of their lineup is. Absolutely. So, again, now, once they get in against the Astros, when they get their asses kicked 22-3 in the final three games or whatever it was, and, you know, they get manhandled the way they did, I have a hard time saying they're better than the Astros. So I don't know that I can say that. And I do think they missed an opportunity, given the way it was going. So,
yeah, no, look, the Astros are better, but the Red Sox still missed an opportunity. The thing should be, you shouldn't be afraid to call them out for not playing at their... If they had gone down playing their best, that's one thing. They were 0 for their last 17 or 0 for the last 19, depending on how you calculate it, with runners in scoring position the last three games, 0 for 19. They started dropping balls in the field. They stopped hitting, and not by a little, by a lot. What was the stat that I gave you before? Over the last 26 innings, they had one run on 9 hits?
Yeah.
Last 26 innings.
Yeah.
Almost last three full games, one run on 9 hits. That's underachieving their talent level.
It's a mathematic anomaly is what it is.
The game's 5 and 6 starters basically no-hit them for 2/3 of the game. I mean, you know, again, they went into the final three innings for the most part in those two games hitless. That's a generalization, but it's pretty damn close.
So they were not playing their best at the end, and it's okay to point that out. Here's an update from Murray. 90 seconds, no spots, and then a final hour of your wonderful calls here on a Reentry Monday.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.